Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of July 21st. Activists are mobilizing for protests against the World Trade Organization, or WTO, as representatives for this multilateral trade policy body meet at a mini-ministerial this weekend in Montreal. Already, fears that clashes between protesters and security will disrupt the meetings have prompted management of Montreal's Queen Elizabeth Hotel to cancel reservations for more than two dozen WTO ministers who will be moving to an as-yet undisclosed location for the closed-door negotiations. About 25 trade ministers from key WTO member countries are scheduled to meet in Montreal from July 28th to 30th in preparation for a ministerial of all 146 WTO member states in Cancun in September. The Montreal meeting will be chaired by Canada's International Trade Minister, Pierre Pettigrew, and follows similar meetings in Sydney, Australia last November, Tokyo, Japan last February, and Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt last month. These mini-ministerials have attracted strong criticism from observers and even from WTO member governments, who argue that the informal meetings are profoundly anti-democratic. WTO mini-ministerials bring together invited trade ministers from 25 to 30 countries to grease the palms of consensus on areas of disagreement. Successes can then be presented to all 146 members of the WTO at the full ministerial as a fait accompli. Selection criteria for the countries invited to these mini-ministerials are unknown, and no written records are kept of the privately held discussions. Nonetheless, decisions are made and agendas are set at these closed-door meetings that affect the entire WTO membership in the absence of a majority of WTO members. Building on common ground shared in the struggles against capitalism, imperialism, and war, Montreal's popular mobilization against the WTO has planned 5 days of education, creative resistance, marches, and direct actions to expose and resist this unfair system and the WTO as a whole, promoting an alternative vision that emphasizes self-determination, dignity, and justice. The WTO has been the object of heated opposition from activists since protests were organized to disrupt the organization's third ministerial in Seattle in November 1999. 4 years later, the anti-globalization movement continues to struggle against the unchecked privatization and capitalist expansion bolstered by the WTO's multilateral trade policies. The WTO was launched in 1995 to provide global economic governance in an era of capitalist globalization and to overhaul the general agreements on trade and tariffs developed after the Second World War. Nearly 20 agreements on tariffs and trade were introduced as a comprehensive set of multilateral trading regulations that would eliminate power and coercion from trade relations. The WTO promised that its new policies would hold powerful and weak economies to a common set of rules backed by effective enforcement and dispute resolution. At the WTO, it was claimed the world's most powerful economy, the U.S., and an impoverished nation like Rwanda, each had one vote and therefore held equal power in shaping international trade policy. The WTO held its first ministerial in Singapore in 1996. At this meeting, the WTO, International Monetary Fund, and World Bank issued a joint declaration stating that their major goals would be to harmonize policies of international trade, finance, and development. The result would be peace and prosperity for every citizen of the globe. It was a triumphant moment for the neoliberal ideology, which supported the accelerated privatization of state-owned assets and services, the deregulation of industry, and multilateral trade liberalization to strengthen market forces and remove the barriers to cross-border trade imposed by governments and organized labor. Since its inception, the policies of the WTO, alongside those of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, have been instrumental in pursuing this neoliberal agenda. Today, these three organizations find themselves under a steady barrage of criticism and opposition for their mismanagement of economic crises around the world. Structural adjustment programs designed by the International Monetary Fund to accelerate privatization, deregulation, and trade liberalization have instead led to economic stagnation, increased poverty, and growing inequality in developing economies around the world. WTO enforcement and dispute resolution policies have been used to undermine governments' abilities to implement progressive labor, social, health, safety, or environmental laws. Meanwhile, WTO trade negotiations have become deadlocked as competing interests have been unable to make headway on a number of crucial issues. A new agreement on agriculture has yet to be negotiated as the U.S., Europe, and Japan refuse to eliminate their massive subsidies to domestic farmers, and as the U.S. and Canada fight Europe over market access for genetically modified foods. Access to generic pharmaceuticals in poor countries has been thwarted by U.S. lobbyists seeking to protect their patent rights. Negotiations on patents themselves have been stalled as nations confront North America's drive to control the production of life-saving medicines and to patent life forms for use in biotechnological innovation. Developing nations are voicing frustration at the costs of neoliberal policies, the lack of transparency in WTO policy development, and the bullying maneuvers of U.S. representatives at the negotiating table. Meanwhile, the U.S. seems prepared to abandon the WTO altogether in pursuit of unilateral free trade agreements that more closely fit the American agenda. The Bush administration's ambivalence towards the WTO stems largely from the fact that the U.S. has lost a number of rulings at the WTO, rulings that may serve the interests of global capital as a whole but are harmful to American business interests. Critics also point to U.S. stalemating at the WTO as evidence of a larger trend towards protectionist economic policies by the Bush administration. Despite its free market rhetoric, the Bush administration has been decidedly protectionist when it comes to trade, investment, and the disbursement of government funds. Whereas the Clinton administration placed primary importance on the expansion of the global economy as the basis of prosperity, the Bush administration has pursued U.S. economic goals at the expense of other key economies in the face of a global economic downturn. For example, Clinton and his trade representative Robert Rubin pushed for a strong dollar policy in the mid-1990s to stimulate growth in Japan and Germany so that these countries could serve as markets for U.S. goods and services. Under Bush, a weak U.S. dollar has made U.S. exports more competitive at home and abroad while crippling economic growth in the EU, Canada, and Japan, pushing the interests of U.S. corporate elites above those of the global capitalist class as a whole. Under the Bush administration, U.S. economic policy has also become more intimately enmeshed with U.S. goals of military supremacy and political hegemony. In May, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Zoellick told reporters that countries seeking free trade agreements with the U.S. would have to pass muster on more than trade and economic criteria in order to be eligible. At a minimum, countries would be expected to cooperate with U.S. foreign policy and domestic security goals, along with 11 other criteria that would guide the U.S. selection of potential free trade partners. The effects of this policy trend have already been observed in recent U.S. negotiations with Australia, Poland, and Chile, where freer trade has meant preferential arms deals and strict rules for customs and immigration. In contrast, agreements negotiated by the WTO have been premised on the naively optimistic assumption that economics and politics operate in different realms. An international rule-based trading regime, it was claimed in the mid-90s, would prevent wars by eliminating unjust barriers to wealth creation. But the free trade mantra has not prevented wars from spreading. Instead, the age of intensified neoliberal expansion has coincided with an escalation of violence by powerful nations against the weak. The third WTO ministerial in Seattle took place just months after the world's dominant economies under the guise of NATO bombed Serbia and Kosovo. The fourth ministerial at Doha was inaugurated during a U.S. military campaign against Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries in the world. And the fifth ministerial in Cancun will take place just weeks after the U.S. and Britain have been forced to admit that they waged a baseless war against the people of Iraq. Though the WTO has not been directly responsible for these acts of U.S.-led aggression, the WTO has certainly been powerless to prevent them. WTO negotiations have also been premised on the notion that loosening restrictions on cross-border trade will help developing economies. History, however, suggests the opposite. While the dominant economies of North America and Europe have perpetuated a myth that their wealth was built on free trade, in fact, almost every nation which has amassed wealth has done so through imperial exploitation, piracy, war, or protectionist economic policies. Now, at the WTO, wealthy nations are requiring developing countries to pursue economic policies that preclude the use of protectionist measures for domestic industry. The result is that poorer nations are forced to access wealth by opening their doors to foreign investment, by which a majority of the benefits return to multinational headquarters in Europe and North America. The hypocrisy of this agenda is brought into sharp relief by recent trends towards protectionism in the U.S. and by the failure of the WTO to make headway on any of the key promises made at Doha, originally hailed as the launch of a development round of WTO trade negotiations. This so-called development round has merely allowed the trade representatives of wealthy states to pat themselves on the back for working to end poverty and strife, while the world's major economic players pursue their own agendas through bilateral trade agreements, protectionist economic measures, lawsuits, military campaigns, and backroom deals at mini-ministerials, the G8 and NATO. So, for heaven's sake, take the time to speak out against this sorry state of affairs, write a letter to your trade representative, and think about investing in a trip to sunny Montreal or seaside Cancun this summer. That's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Beesneys reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.